Unitarians are unusual in how we question religion and we explore other beliefs, our own and other people's faith. We value reason in all things. And despite our knowledge and our use of reason, it's curious how ingrained childhood ideas of religion remain with us. And these ideas colour our attitude to faith today. And they're certainly ideas that have outlived their usefulness. They were stories we were told to explain things simply, but those have lost their usefulness. I'll give you a few examples of what I mean. When the word God is used, do we envisage a male, a type of Superman, dressed in robes? Do we have an image of the world when we think of religion as being three-dimensional, that heaven is somewhere up there, inhabited by God and the angels? Humans are down here on the earth, and down below is hell. That was useful at one stage. It doesn't help us now. Do we believe that happiness is in heaven and hell is a place of punishment and earth is a place to duck as much suffering as you can? Life is a test with reward or punishment when we die. Suffering is the natural condition of life. God expects us to believe certain dogmas. So maybe there are some of the concepts you hold, maybe even subconsciously now, or maybe you've dismissed them from your life. But I find that often you have to dismiss them over and over again. They still lurk in the background somewhere. The Christianity we have inherited originated with St. Paul. And St. Paul's faith is based on his personal experience of what he called the risen Christ. But Paul never tells us what his experience was. And all the time, he emphasized belief. That emphasis on belief was the foundation of faith, and it was put into by the Christian councils, it was set into creedal statements that everyone was required to believe. The Pauline version of Christianity was reinforced by Reformation theology. The touchstone of the Reformation is justified by faith alone, as St. Paul in his letter to the Romans. When you look at Christian theology and dogma, it is garnered from fragmented snippets extracted from different parts of the Bible and strung together. It was also influenced by the existing culture of the third and fourth centuries. And that influence was very strong. And at that time, it was not unusual for noted individuals to be declared divine. Five Roman emperors were gods: Augustus, Claudius, Vespasian, Titus, and Julius Caesar. They were called gods, and the Egyptian pharaohs were a god. Religious leaders maintained that the tenets of faith cannot be changed, and claims of being infallible march against the possibility of Christianity changing itself now, even when it seems obvious that it has lost a lot of its relevance. The Christian story says that Adam and Eve fell from a state of perfection into evil, and that fall from grace necessitated the sacrificial death of Jesus. Most Christians and Christian churches now accept the theory of evolution. And Darwin's theory of evolution and historic evidence show that overall the progress of humanity is from a state of ignorance towards more enlightenment thinking. There never was a time when humans existed in a state of perfection. Rather than falling from perfection, humans are at their essence drawn towards goodness and altruism. Caring for others brings us joy. And when we do something wrong, in our heart of hearts, we know it. And we know it not because church leaders or church rules told us. We know it from within ourselves, that draw of conscience, you know, that niggles at you when you're honest and you confront what you've done and you know that wasn't right. Christianity denies the inherent draw towards goodness. And you know, even some forms of Christian baptism ceremony include, certainly they used to and some still do, a form of exorcism. And I think it's a travesty to say that any newborn infant could be full of evil. It is just ridiculous. So Christian dogma, these are stories created of their time. Many of them have outlived their usefulness. However, the teaching of Jesus, when you take away the dogma, is not dated. It is perennial. When we go back to these teachings, we see that that teaching chimes with the sages from other faith traditions. The words and the symbols and the practices may differ, but the underlying concepts are remarkably similar. The Unitarian writers Channing and Emerson make wonderful observations regarding the need for Christianity to focus solely on the teachings of Jesus. And they point out some things that are so obvious. You just think, you go, wow, that's really, really true. Channing said of Jesus and his message that if he was sent by God to teach humanity, then surely the teaching will be given in a way that is easy to understand. And one of my childhood memories that sticks in my mind that made me question my religious teaching was being told, never expect to understand the doctrine of Trinity. You have to accept it on faith. Jesus never said that to simple fishermen of his time. He talked to ordinary people. His message was so direct that it was life-changing. He never mentioned Adam or the fall of Adam. He never mentioned the Trinity. Jesus never mentioned salvation through faith. Emerson's wonderful insight was that when Jesus claimed to be the Son of God, to say he was one with the Father, he did not make that claim exclusively of himself. He didn't say to them, I am the Son of God. You're only a work in progress. You know, you're way down there. You have to believe to get there. The human Jesus intuited that every human is a child of God. The Hindu faith puts this slightly differently. It says that there is a spark of the divine within every person. That spark may from time to time grow dim, as if the flame is covered by dust, but it is never extinguished. For thousands of years, Hindus have greeted one another with the word Namaste. And they accompany that by bowing to the person. And a rough word translation is, I greet the God within you. This beautiful greeting acknowledges the essential human goodness and dignity of the God within every human being. Think of how Jesus behaved with his followers and the people he met. He shared food with the sinners and the tax gatherers, the people who were the outcasts of his day. And in the Jewish tradition, who you shared food with was very important. It was a no-go one to share it with known sinners. He treated his disciples with deep respect. He washed his disciples' feet. He said, "The greatest among you will be your servant. For those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted." Jesus honored the good within every person, and that's how he nurtured even more good. And it's strange to think that the church that developed in his name adapted the trappings of monarchy. I looked this up and I was really astounded that until the appointment of Pope John Paul I, that's 2005, popes were crowned. A triple crown was used, a symbol of their spiritual and temporal authority. Useless facts. There are 22 papal crowns still in existence. And of that 22, 9 were created since the 20th century. The last papal crown presented to a pope was in 2016. Now, he wasn't crowned, but 2016. The teaching that can transform how we live has become a test of belief. As one writer put it, many Christian denominations, religion has become, the religion of the Christian faith has become the practice of an evacuation plan, how to get your soul out of hell and into heaven. Not to transform your life, an evacuation plan for when you die. Just for a moment, let's think of Jesus' belief that every human being is a child of God and the concept of God within every being. If we were really to see every person as having divinity within, how would it change our attitudes? Would we marvel at our own existence, the miracle of ourselves? The miracle of being alive right now in the beauty of the natural world. Each body, no matter how wonky and wobbly we are, is a miracle of life. Modern culture has a great ability to make us undervalue ourselves. As I read recently, it emphasized the ums and the nots about ourselves. We are unworthy, unlovable, undeserving, not lovable enough, not pretty enough, not smart enough. The advertisements may say, "We do it because we're worth it." That's because they want you to buy something, not because of the worth and dignity of you as a human reflecting divinity. If we believed in the divinity of each person, how would it change how we treat other people? Would we maintain the sense of entitlement that is so prevalent in the developed world? This sense of entitlement means that in the developed world, we consume most of the earth's resources. We are responsible for the excess carbon that is being the cause of climate change. And we insulate ourselves from destruction caused by that changed climate, and we do it at the expense of poorer countries. Do we ever really think that our actions are taking the land from the people of Bangladesh and lower-lying countries? If we believed in the dignity of every person, would we feel that it's our responsibility to do something about poverty and homelessness. Our belief that we actually, well, I contribute to that, I do enough. If we believed in divinity within ourselves, would we pay more attention to the spiritual dimension of our lives? Would we make time to connect with that true divine nature? Would we dare to let our light shine? Namaste. I greet the God within each one of you. Amen.